Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz live from the Kintech Studio. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at DunbarLumber.com. Playoff coverage here on Sportsnet 650 brought to you by All Cargo Express. International shipping, importing, and exporting. Explore their services or get a quote at AllCargoExpress.com. Into the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. Lots of thoughts ahead of Game 7 between the Canucks and the Oilers tonight. And right off the top of the show, Ryan, the H2O distributor, texts in. First of all, we need a bigger what's up every hour on the hour. And we'll see about that. He says, I'm hyped. The boys are going to rally for Brock. This is our Stanley Cup 7 for the season. Let's take out Edmonton. Who cares what happens next? That's from Ryan, the H2O distributor. And I do think the kind of the mentality of Canucks fans going into this one and the stakes for these two franchises, for these two fan bases, is very, very interesting. Because on the one hand, for Canucks fans, I think it's very easy to be feeling pretty down, right? The loss of Brock Besser, still no Thatcher Demko, who a couple weeks ago there were, you know, rumblings that maybe he'd be an option for Game 7. You put up probably your worst performance of the playoffs on the road in Game 6 with a chance to eliminate the Oilers. There's a lot that can lead you to be feeling pessimistic. But the flip side of all that is you also have an incredible opportunity here. And as I talked about before this series started, right, when, you know, there was so much talk of how can the Canucks be this big underdogs? What's going on here? Well, you can embrace that. And that just means if you're the massive underdog going into a series, that just makes it all the sweeter if you win that series. And I think there's a similar thing going on here tonight. Obviously, they're not as extreme underdogs on the gambling line. But the fact that Brock Besser is out, right, dealing with that emotional blow right before Game 7, any Game 7 victory against the Edmonton Oilers in the playoffs would be a big deal, would be something that fans remember for a long time. But if they win tonight, like, this is a historic win, a historic, memorable moment type of win for this Canucks franchise. And I get it that then you're in the Western Conference Finals, and at that point, it's so difficult to get there. You don't want to say like, oh, hey, good season. Who cares what happens? Like, you still want to win. I completely understand that. But I just think the upside for Canucks fans, if they win tonight, versus the downside, which is really disappointing, don't get me wrong, you have an opportunity to advance to the Western Conference Finals, but you're coming on, like, it's going to be the end of an amazing season if they lose tonight. They're going to get a standing O from the crowd, if they lose, given what they've done, given how fun some of these home games have been in the playoffs. So the downside is bad. Don't get me wrong. But I think if you're looking at this in comparison to, like, your typical Game 7 experience, I think the emotional high if they win is higher than typical. And the emotional low if they lose is probably also higher, right? Like, I think there's a high ceiling for Canucks fans' emotions tonight and a high floor as well.
Yeah, there's some asymmetry, especially on the downside equation, right? The Oilers will have missed a historic opportunity if they lose tonight.
Yeah.
The Canucks, we will not feel that way about, no matter what happens. Now, I might quibble with the upside part of it, because Canucks fans will be elated if they win. Oilers fans will be elated if they win. And tomorrow, Oilers fans will wake up and be Stanley Cup favorites in the
final
four.
But don't you think
the
Oilers
Canucks will still be the underdog of the four remaining
teams? You think even if the Oilers win tonight, though, there's an element of more like dodging a bullet than a great accomplishment?
Well, for sure. But also, like, the Canucks shot 20% for the first four games in the series. They chased Skinner from the series, and the Oilers survived that, you know. If you go look at the annals of NHL history and find teams that had 800 goaltending for four games in a series and managed to even make it to a Game 7, I haven't done the work, but I guarantee you there's not many, right? Especially, you know, in the last 15, 20 years. So, for sure, dodging bullets is what the playoffs is about. You go one game over 500 over 2 weeks against one opponent, and you advance.
It is, and I'm not saying that to take anything away from the Edmonton Oilers, but I'm just saying from the fans' perspective, it's a very different feeling than we rallied despite this adversity of losing one of our best players and crushed our rivals, who are the preseason Stanley Cup favorite season.
100%.
You know what I mean? Like, that is just like, oh my goodness, we did it.
But it also depends how tonight unfolds, right? The degrees to which this game goes will also determine how much Oilers fans feel like they escaped it versus how much Oilers fans will be like, you know, despite our goaltending early in the series, this team came out and was authoritative late, right? Once their backs were against the wall, right? Those are both absolutely storylines that could come out of an Oilers win, and vice versa, right? If the Canucks you know, win big or sneak one out, like it's going to take a totally different feel in terms of how we discuss what Vancouver's accomplished and their opportunity against Dallas on Tuesday. Now, one thing about this, though, right? The idea that, like, they have more on the line than the Canucks is, like, fundamentally what you're talking about is a coping strategy, right?
Yeah.
And that's what Game 7's all about. Like, Game 7 for... Now,
you have to put yourself in the best position mentally to survive. 100%. And whatever you got to do that, make it happen.
Be kind to the hardcore Canucks fan in your life. There are a lot of emotions going on today. And what's interesting is the emotions for people outside the game who actually can't control the outcome
mm-hmm.
in some ways swing more widely than they do for those players who are, like, literally right now sticking to their game day routine. They're eating the same thing they always do. They're about to go down for a nap if that's what they do. They're, you know, there's so much to do in terms of getting prepared for 6 p.m. that's where your mind's at. You're not sitting around being like, oh my God, what's going to happen tonight? You know, there's more on the line for them. That's Canucks aren't thinking that way, right? They're just preparing.
Yep.
And that said, I do think there's a massive emotional component to a game like tonight. And one thing I'd note is, you know, I thought one of Vancouver's games where they got away from playing Canucks hockey the most in this playoffs was game two of the Nashville series after the Demko injury, right? You had that sort of goal against a Smith. Nashville made it 2-0 after Vancouver's top line, uncharacteristically for them this season, took too long a shift trying to sort of play hero puck as opposed to playing Canucks hockey. You know, I just thought it was like a uncharacteristically sloppy performance, emotional performance from the Canucks. And that was, you know, I think partly in response to what had happened with the Demko injury, with losing such a key part of this team. That can't happen again tonight, right? Like there is... You know, for example, like let's talk JT Miller, the emotional leader of this team, bar none. There's no question about that. That's not controversial to say at all.
Nope.
You know, Miller is at his best, as he's shown us this season, when he plays the game contained within himself, right? When he doesn't try to do too much. When he makes the conservative puck handling decisions that are this club's bread and butter, right? When he doesn't take an extra long shift because he's trying to win the game all at once, right? Eat the elephant in one bite as opposed to piece by piece, as Rick Tocchet and Bishop Desmond Tutu would have it. That tonight, especially with Besser gone, you know, like that to me is a big mental test for the Canucks, right? You need to not double down on trying to win the game aggressively early. You need to double down on playing a super disciplined Canucks hockey game where you grind down an opponent and it's a 2-1, 3-1 game. If you take the lead and you're able to pick apart the opponent on mistakes. Like, first goal, disciplined hockey. Like, that's everything for the Canucks tonight. And it's going to be actually kind of hard to get there, I think, given the emotional blow of this loss. Now, for fans, that's from the player's perspective where, yes, there's an emotional component to this, but in some ways you feel the stress a little bit less than you do if you're the general public. The fan side of it, I love this. Like, I love all the different approaches we're getting in the inbox or in my conversations with, like, you're talking about the stakes guy. Okay. So there's like the stakes guy who's like, this means more to them. We weren't even supposed to be here. Right. Then you've got everyone knows this Canucks fan. And I guarantee you they're a Canucks Talk listener. You've got the Canucks fan who wants nothing more than to see the team win. But because they're so emotionally invested in it, they do the negative thing. They're like already preparing themselves for the disappointment. They're like,
I knew this team wasn't going to get it done. You were fooling yourself if you thought it.
They lost this series in game six when they came out flat.
Yeah.
You know, they're already steeling themselves emotionally. I do.
Anticipating the worst thing that can happen so that you're not disappointed when it happens.
100%. Yeah. And like saying it with confidence as if you know.
Mm-hmm.
This type of fan, by the way, also does the Pascal's wager, where you like bet on the Oilers so that if the result you don't want happens, you at least make money. Like that's that type of fan, mm-hmm. right? You've also got the hyper positive, like the power of positivity fan who's like, you know, they've gotten here. They've outplayed the Oilers all series long except for game six. You know, like they've been in every game. They're going to be in tonight. This team's defensive play. They're going to play for Brock. You know, like the positive, they don't even allow the sort of negative thoughts to enter into the equation or into their brain. You've got the tea time Canucks fan. Do you know about this type of Canucks fan? the tee time Canucks fan books a tee time, or you know, you can use the golf as a stand-in for whatever,
sure,
whatever hobby you prefer. Right, you go for a hike, and you go for a hike at like 3, and it's like, oh, I might miss the first period. I might miss the first period. I'm just too busy. I'm just too busy doing the things I love in life. Okay. And this fan, the moment the game
starts.
I've
just got too much going on.
Just too much going on.
I'm not that into sports.
And this fan, by the way, the moment the game starts, either has the game on their phone in the golf cart or is like constantly refreshing with spotty reception up a mountain somewhere on the North Shore. Okay. And this fan also is coping. This fan cares every bit as much about the rest of us as the rest of us about the outcome tonight. But they're hedging emotionally where they're like, I've got so much richness in my life. And really what they're doing is, in the event that things don't look like they're going Vancouver's way, they'll be like, well, let's go for a brew or something. You know, like they're distracting themselves as opposed to dealing with the fact that they're just like everyone else.
I never did that, but I've definitely had experiences back when I was like just a hardcore fan where you're watching the big games like almost out of the corner of your eye. You know what I mean? Where it's like it's on, but you're like, I can't, it's like too emotional to look directly at it. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean, but that could not be less like me.
But it's like a hybrid between like radio and TV almost, where you're like glancing at it, but you're like, I can't look directly at it. It has too much power.
So I remember growing up, do you remember when Hunter S. Thompson used to write for Page 2
yes.
of ESPN? So Hunter S. Thompson wrote a column one time about discovering the Colorado Avalanche in the mid-90s, and him and Patrick Roy actually became good friends. And he talked about what he loved
I
about...
I didn't know that. That's an incredible duo right there.
And what he talked about was that hockey has this certain sense of, like, grace and speed intercut with the most outrageous violence that you could possibly imagine. And at completely arbitrary intervals, right? And he said it got him so fired up. Hunter S. Thompson wrote this. He said it got him so fired up that during intermissions, he'd go outside on his ranch and fire a gun. That's a coping strategy right there, baby. That's for real stuff. That's bat country. Coping strategies from you know, one of the weirdest scribes of the last 60 years.
I definitely used to do like the walk around the block between periods.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And actually, the one I remember this most for is the 2010 gold medal game where they tie up late. And I'm like, I can't just sit here in this party. I'm going for a walk. I need to get out and get some fresh air.
Oh, yeah. Well, I made the mistake of watching Game 6 of the 2011 Stanley Cup final with like a group of people. And then when it went against the Canucks, I was like, I hate this.
Yeah.
I hate being around everybody.
I left games like watch parties at people's houses in the 2011 Stanley Cup final because I was like, I can't be in this environment. This
me
is
too.
Miserable. I kicked people out of my apartment in game wow. 3 of the Stanley Cup final towards the end, like with like 5 minutes left in the third. And I was like, we're not just going to sit around drinking beers and having fun, guys. Like, get out. What are you doing? This is a morning time.
Yeah. See, I was and this is how I approach everything in life. I was the like, I need to watch solo. And I want to understand everything, right? Which I think lends me to where
shocking.
I've come. Yes. No, I want to try and understand. This is how I used to be deathly afraid of flying. Now I fly 600 times a year, right? And it wasn't until I understood everything and like knew how to look up pilot reports of turbulence and like, you know, once I had the knowledge base, it was no problem. But I have to add, so anyway, everyone has their
coping. Well, in some ways, that is another cope. Right?
100%.
Another is like, I'm going to be aggressively ingesting all possible information to feel like I have the greatest possible handle on this, which is so funny in a Game 7 situation when we know how random and arbitrary it ultimately
none
is,
of it
right?
Matters.
Like you can be the biggest Canucks expert in the world and whatever happens tonight is probably going to surprise you.
At the end of the day, we can talk about how Game 6 went or the 5-on-5 flow of the series or the Canucks forecheck getting home or Artur Seelov's bouncing back or Stuart Skinner being, you know, gettable or Stanley Cup odds. And like today could still be the day that Sam Lafferty becomes a Vancouver hockey icon. You know, like that just is what it is. So what I'm thinking about when I think about all of these different coping strategies that fans take, and feel free to text in yours if you're not represented in the amount of fans we've enumerated. The way you cope for Game 7, I think in some ways tells us something about, especially if you're a hardcore, where you've been on the spectrum of discussing this team and enjoying this team over some of the lean years that have led up to tonight. You know, like the they're not going to get it done fan, who's been like critical of every signing and critical of the overall approach, and the super positive fan who's just like, I believe in these guys and I connect emotionally with these players. The tea time fan who's like, I'm not going to watch every game because they're not good enough for my time. But then look, knows exactly where they're at and has takes.
Yes.
You know? However you've supported this team, you've probably argued with the people who support it differently. But you're not arguing today. Today, you're all in it together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what I've been thinking about a little bit with the magic of this run, right? Is as this team starts to play meaningful games into the summer and the weather is good and it's playoff hockey the way it should be. Although maybe the season should be a little closer to wrapping up as opposed to the playoffs only being halfway done at this point in late May. Everything, every take, right? Every opinion that has been aired about this team over the last 10 years, every player that's been criticized actually comes from the same place. And that only becomes apparent when that meets a form of expression that's like communal, cheerful, prideful, winning hockey. Right? Like now you go on Canucks Twitter and Canucks Twitter's, there's no infighting, like almost none, except from the most absolute, like toxic corners of it. Everyone just wants to see this team win, and everyone's going to cope with it the exact same way they coped with a decade of darkness, you know, in a related way. More than anything, I think that's what this has been a reminder of, is just like, however things go tonight, right? This has been a reminder of how special a hockey market Vancouver is when things are good. And I just think we need to keep that in mind for the next time things turn, you know, that we can fight, we can disagree on approaches, we can talk things to death. Avid hockey discussers in this market. That's what we do. But like fundamentally, when the times are good again, it's going to be a hilariously unified celebration in this community. And, you know, I think that bears keeping in mind. Myers said today after game one against Nashville, he's been telling all his family, you have to come to a game. That's what Tyler Myers said today. And he said, because it's different in Vancouver. Exactly.
And I think whether it ends tonight, whether it ends at some point in the future, one of the big storylines from this playoff appearance will be the revitalization of that excitement in the city, in the market, right? We've talked about it a lot. I've talked about like the chants on the schoolyard at my daughter's school. That's a huge part of the story. It can go to even another level if they win tonight. And that's part of the stakes of this, right? To like cement, to pay off part of this, what's already been a great connection between the team and the fans, and give them this type of moment against the Oilers tonight would be incredible. I want to read some text here.
Yeah.
Because we got a lot of responses to your coping strategies. This one comes in, oh my God, Drance, can't believe you nailed me so completely. I'm a mix of Book of Tea Time and negative guy, LOL. Tony says, I get so nervous I wander around in circles. I've even gone so far as to turn off the sound due to sensory overload. So that's a little bit what I was saying, right? It's like the full sensory thing is just too much. It's like there's too much emotion. There's too much power. I got to limit it in some way. Turn it down just a little bit. Tony's
on
me there.
You got to go into Plato's cave.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody else says just they are the pacer. So again, the talking, the walking around. Pablo from Montreal says, my girlfriend made plans tonight so I can be alone and watch the game. She said I'm too intense. Mike the urologist from Brockville says, I don't watch games with people unless they've been carefully vetted if it's for playoff games, and no more than two. I'm very much the same way. I have like two guys who it's like, okay, I can watch the hockey with you. Don't bring other people. It just has to be a small group of people I like and trust in playoffs.
I like Alistair and Vic talking about making sure to have some beers, making sure to have some
part
pops.
Of the cope, part of the cope.
and I liked the Cam in Port Moody who goes for a drive and moves to the radio because I can't watch it, but also can't be out of the loop. That's a good deviation on the like limit your exposure, which I think is a tea timer. That's to me, that's a tea timer response.
I'm glad I'm not the only one who kind of falls into that category.
In fact,
like,
it seems very common.
It's too much.
One last thing here.
Yeah.
If you're going to the game tonight, okay, because Canucks fans have been so awesome throughout this season, right? There's been, I wonder if the Bruce There It Is chants have kind of changed the atmosphere around Canucks games because it just feels more boisterous.
And it feels so much more organic.
Yeah, and
you know what I mean?
There's some game presentation elements
for sure,
and
they do a good job. I don't want to take anything away, but game presentation can only take you so far in terms of building that atmosphere. At a certain point, it has to be organic from the fans.
Well, and also the pandemic, you know, made massive improvements. Teams made massive improvements in terms of like simulating game environment, right? Like there's a lot going on that contributes to it, but the difference in tone of the Rogers Arena crowd this season versus what we saw in 2011. Just like, and I this is going to sound negative. It's not. There's a blind faith in this team, which, by the way, they've kept delivering on.
Mm-hmm.
To come back to my, this isn't a hockey team, this is a cult thing. There's a certain sense of blind faith that never used to exist. Vancouver crowds tended to be nervous more than anything. Like, if a team scored against the Canucks first, the atmosphere would change. It would be like, oh no, not again. It's like the scar tissue of Kluche and some of the Blackhawks comebacks against the Sedin teams and on would like commingle and become something that actually, you see this, by the way, still in Toronto, right? Toronto,
yes,
hosting a game seven is not an advantage by any means. Toronto playing a game seven is not an advantage, especially in the first round. But tonight, I do think partly, if you're listening to this and you're going to the game, I do think making sure, because it's amazing how like one or two fans who don't succumb to that can influence like an entire section, which can influence the entire building.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't think that you don't have an impact. If you're able to keep supporting this team when things go wrong, if you're able to avoid falling into that like nervous, fatalist Canucks fan crowd tonight, do it. Do it. It's amazing how much your behavior will influence those around you and thus potentially the game, potentially the environment in which the game is played. I think it's really incumbent on Canucks fans to keep that level of like, you know, the Pettersson chance, just the relentless faith and positivity that this crowd has shown all playoffs. It's going to be tested tonight too, and that's on the fans to rise to.
And
I'm serious.
I have no doubt that the fans are going to be absolutely fantastic tonight, pretty much no matter what is going on in the game, certainly at the start of the game, and they're going to give all the energy they can to the players, and it's up to the players to see what they do with it. Lots of good texts coming in about the type of Canucks fan you are, the type of coping you'll be doing, so we can get into more of those later on in the show, but we will take a break right now. Gemma Carston-Smith from the Canadian Press joins us here to tee up game seven between the Canucks and the Oilers. It is Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? JanPro, the leaders in commercial cleaning and janitorial. If your workplace demands a clean environment, contact JanPro for a free, no-obligation quote. Visit janpro.ca. Gemma Carston-Smith will join us momentarily here to talk about Game 7. And in fact, we have her on the line covering the Canucks for the Canadian Press, joining us here every week on the show. She is Gemma Carston-Smith. Gemma, thank you as always. How are you today on Game 7 game day?
Game 7, big game energy over here.
Yes.
Everywhere.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of highly stressed out texts from our listeners in the inbox, which is no surprise because this is a big one, man. This is literally backs against the wall, must-win territory. Now, we should start with the Brock Besser news, which is really unfortunate, obviously from a personal perspective for Brock, first and foremost, to be dealing with a blood clotting issue out of this game. What was your reaction just to hearing that news yesterday that he wouldn't be able to suit up for this one tonight?
Just disappointment, honestly. Disappointment for the team as a whole because he is such a crucial piece. And disappointment for Brock as a person because we all cheer for humans in this industry. And he has been such a great person to cheer for. He's overcome so much in terms of injuries, in terms of what he's gone through in his personal life. It was so great to see him have an amazing regular season from the very first night where he had four goals against the Oilers all the way through the playoffs. And I can't even imagine what he's going through right now. So any disappointment we feel is it pales in comparison, I'm sure. So just thinking of him as a person, hoping he gets better really soon, and that he goes on to have a really long, healthy career ahead of him.
Yeah, and the good news is the reports are that it's not career threatening, and hopefully that is the case, and he's able to get back for next season and, you know, continue where he left off this year in the playoffs, which is just having such a fantastic playoffs. So from a kind of the perspective of the game tonight, and as you said, the human side is first and foremost here. One of the interesting things is, okay, there's the, you know, losing the goal scorer, Brock Besser, the defensively reliable forward, but there's also kind of the emotional blow to his teammates, right? Of all of a sudden having one of their best players taken out of the lineup in really difficult circumstances. Did you get kind of a sense of, just from talking to the players today, of how they're kind of processing that?
Yeah, I think that it definitely is an emotional blow, especially because we all know that Brock is such a well-liked human, both in the room and in, I want to say, like, normal life, but I guess the room is a normal life, too. Anyway, I think that what you have seen across these playoffs is teams rally when they lose one of their big stars. You saw it happen with the Leafs and Matthews. You saw how... in Colorado, yeah, they had that one really dismal performance after Nichushkin was suspended, but they rallied after that. So I think that you can see how an absence like this in the lineup can bring a team together. And that's what Dakota Joshua said at the podium today, that they, it kind of fuels their fire to do this for Brock. So hopefully that's actually happens tonight and you see it out on the ice.
Gemma, what do you expect from the crowd tonight? We saw after the Demko injury, like game two of the Nashville series feels different to me, atmosphere-wise, than so much else of what we've seen. Now, maybe it was the early deflection goal, I don't know. But do you expect the Besser news to resonate in terms of the reception from the crowd tonight?
I think that this was always going to be a crowd that had anxiety. I've said it before that if you're not a real Canucks fan, if you don't operate on that like overly caffeinated level of anxiety at all times, and I think that you can only expect that to be heightened in a Game 7 environment. And now Game 7 without your leading scorer just brings that up a little bit. So you've gone from like overly caffeinated to like afraid of airplanes and on a flight. How's that?
I like it. We've been debating the asymmetry of the stakes going into tonight's game. The idea that the Oilers have more to lose and in some ways less to gain from a victory versus Vancouver, where, you know, whether you win or lose, everyone's going to look at this season as a massive success. How do you feel about that aspect of this series going into tonight?
Yeah, I think that's the only way you can look at it, for sure. Obviously, both teams are going to be let down if they're not the one that moves on tonight. That's just hockey.
Yeah.
But the expectations at the outset of the season were wildly different from these two teams. We all know that Jim Rutherford said everything had to go right for this team to make the playoffs, and now they're in Game 7 against the team that was, at the outset of the season, presumed to be they were the front runners for the Stanley Cup. So you can't call this anything but a success. On the other hand, the Oilers they've had some real low moments this season, and they've fought back. They had the coaching change. That's all of those things. They'll be disappointed too if they are not the ones to go forward, but they've overcome a lot. So I think from both sides, there's different ways to view this season, but I think the Oilers are the club that you would see make major changes if they're not the ones to move on out of tonight.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, for a cup or bust year, if they don't get past the Vancouver Canucks in this one, there's going to be some very, very difficult questions being asked in Edmonton. And, you know, one of the questions Rick Tocchet will have to deal with now is how does he adjust for the absence of Brock Besser? And obviously it was an optional morning skate today, so we didn't really get much of a tip of his hand. We know Ilya Mikheyev and Sam Lafferty are going to come back in. How do you expect Rick Tocchet to kind of divvy up the minutes? And whether it's one replacement next to JT Miller or Pew Suter, whether it's kind of a mix and match scenario, how do you expect to see him adjust for the loss of Brock Besser?
I expect him to bring out the blender and not for smoothies. I think that we're going to see a lot of different looks tonight. obviously Sam Lafferty and Ilya Mikheyev coming back in is big. I think he tries to put Pettersson up with Miller as much as he can if it's working, right? If he gives that pairing a look to start and he's just not getting anything from either of them, then he's going to go away from it right quick because he's seen enough from the Lotto line over the course of the season to know what when it's working and when it's not, and mostly it wasn't. So he's not someone who's going to try and let them work it out. This is not the game to work things out. This is the game where you have to be decisive, where you have to have everyone going full bore. This is game seven, right? And so he's going to have to make decisions real quick and stick with them.
Gemma, when I think about this series, it feels to me less like, you know, this titanic clash of teams that have been on their game and more like two teams that have been pretty inconsistent at finding their game throughout, almost taking like a one-on, one-off over the course of the series to sort of get us here. What do you expect just in terms of what these two teams can throw at each other tonight? Are we going to finally see both teams kind of be able to play their game within the context of a single contest?
I hope so, because I really think that that's what's been missing from this series is two teams at their best. Like you said, I think that we've seen flashes from both teams, but not a consistent game where you get both teams really going at each other and putting out their best, right? And that's what Game 7 should be. I think that we've seen each team defeat itself in at least one game here. We haven't always seen the best team win in every game here. And the margins have been so fine. Five of the six games that we've seen have been one goal games. And at that point, it's like essentially a coin toss, right? So I think that we'll see a tight game tonight. Anyone who says that they're expecting a blowout, I think they haven't watched the first six games here. I think that even Game 6 the other night in Edmonton could have been a lot closer had it the Canucks just really kind of fell apart in the third there. And I think that if we see each team at their best here tonight, it's going to be some really entertaining hockey, a lot of fun to watch, and I'm sorry for anyone who has to write on a buzzer.
It would be great if we saw both teams at their best or at something close to their best, because I agree with you, we haven't really seen that. But doesn't it also feel like that rarely happens in game sevens? You know
right?
what I mean? Like game sevens are usually just like tense and neither team is that sharp. I feel like that's more what we're headed for than anything else tonight.
Well, way to be a downer.
Hey, that's what we do on this show.
Yeah.
But like there is this element of, you know, game seven, it's almost a fool's errand to try to predict what's going to happen or like, hey, this is how the game is going to look. This is what they need to do because there's so much randomness. Having said that, in your kind of mind's eye, what does a successful performance for the Canucks most likely look like tonight?
They have to be able to limit McDavid. They have to put a ton of shots at Skinner because I think that was very much missing from Game 6. I think that they didn't have to nearly enough. And they just have to be consistent. They have to limit their own mistakes. They have to be strong in the defensive end, and they have to test Skinner as early and as often as possible. And if they can do that, then they got to hope tonight. And if not, then we'll talk about garbage bag day next week.
Gemma, I was walking to the rink today and I saw a car flag at half mast. Presumably about Besser. Do you support that kind of gesture given your well-known opinion hating our car flags?
You know where I stand on this. This is absolute charcuterie.
Chicanery?
There we go.
Absolute charcuterie.
This is absolute charcuterie.
Okay, Dolly.
Put it on a plate. Yeah, exactly. Thanks for that. My car flags are stupid. Don't put them on a half mast. You're just like,
see, I think if you're going to have it, commit to the bit. I think that's great. I think that's smart.
No. It's an official state flag on a vehicle.
How do you even do that? But like, how?
It's called a little ingenuity, Gemma.
Okay, but you guys,
thinking outside the box.
There were literally car flags parachuting down from the top of the rink in Edmonton the other night, and I was like, I give up. I just give up.
You brought this on yourself, Gemma. Your anti-car flag crusade, man. It's going to be haunting you now.
I know that. It is, and I stand firm in my decision that these are just a plague on the world.
All right. Well, we appreciate we appreciate you standing your ground on that one, Gemma, and we appreciate you, as always, coming on and talking hockey with us. Thank you for doing this.
Yep. And enjoy the game, and good luck with the buzzer story.
Yeah, enjoy game 7 tonight.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
That is Gemma Karsten-Smith from the Canadian Press, previewing game 7 between the Canucks and the Oilers tonight. And I want to get back into the inbox here in just a second and talk a little bit more about some of the coping strategies, some of the emotional perspective from Canucks fans going into tonight. But, you know, I asked Gemma about the emotional toll on the Canucks players, or, you know, as she said, hey, they can turn that around and say, let's win this for Brock. Let's do it for him. You can use that as emotional fuel. But I think just the idea of that state of emotion for the Canucks players tonight is going to be really fascinating, because obviously you need to be at such a high level of intensity in a game 7, right? You need to come out, all those cliches, leave it all on the ice, yada, yada, yada. We all know that. And it's all true. But the thing that I find fascinating about this Canucks team, because I can look at it and say, okay, you know, the star players, JT Miller, Elias Pettersson, Quinn Hughes, they need to be game breakers for the Canucks tonight. But the way this team has had success all year has been playing so consistently within themselves, within the structure, right? Within Rick Tocchet Canucks style hockey. And I think for those three guys that I mentioned in particular, right? Pettersson, JT Miller, Quinn Hughes. Because for how important the structure is, and obviously it's been vastly important, right? And that identity of Canucks hockey, like the upside case for this team is still they have this trio of skaters that are absolutely incredible at the top of their lineup. And you think, okay, you need them to be great. But I think there's this very interesting line to walk for those players between knowing that they have to be the best players, trying to raise their game without trying to hit that home run on one shift. And I think that's going to be I don't think that's an easy task by any stretch. No. I think it's really difficult, but they're going to have to find that balance, looking for those game-breaking moments while staying within themselves simultaneously.
Especially because Vancouver just needs to keep it close here, right? Like, there's a skill, okay? We can talk all we want about the skill advantage of having McDavid, Hyman, Dreisaitl in the lineup, right? We can talk about depth comparisons. We can talk about what Dylan Holloway did in game 6 versus what the Canucks have got from their depth players offensively throughout this series. You can talk about breakouts, forecheck, all that. Here's a skill we don't talk about enough, I don't think. And this applies to the question I asked you about when did you actually think the Canucks were out of it in game 6, and it came preposterously late.
Yep.
Right? There is a skill to closing out games, and it is a skill Vancouver has. And it is a skill Vancouver has more so than Edmonton. I think we've actually seen it in this series, but I also think we've seen it throughout the year, right? Vancouver has a different gear defensively. Vancouver is pretty good at limiting the damage.
Mm-hmm.
And Vancouver is masterful at taking what looks like a surefire loss and flipping that game on its head right quick. And Vancouver's ability to do that is aided by the fact that on occasion, and contrary to the Canucks, from the blue line in, the Oilers can get a bit lost. Right? So, you don't need to be up, even going into the third. But you need to be within one.
Yeah.
You know? You don't need to be... If you're the Canucks, the key here is just make sure that the Oilers don't blow a fastball by you twice in a row. Right? Like, keep it close. Keep it close, and this team, we know, with the crowd behind them, is going to have a shot to do something funky. And all it's going to take is one funky bounce to flip this series, to pull off this incredible upset underdog script that the Canucks are still, to this point, even with the loss of Brock Besser ahead of Game 7, you know, on pace for, frankly. Right? I mean, we talked about it before the series. Remember, I was touting, if you like
get
the Canucks
late
in this series,
get it late. Yep.
Get the 15-1 and the 10-1 that they win in 7 or 6. Because I didn't see a scenario where the Canucks blew over the Oilers in this series. I did see a scenario where the Canucks take advantage of an opportunity like this. And by the way, if you told me before the series that the Canucks were going to force a game 7 but have to play it without Brock Besser, I still would have said, okay, well, that's the series script playing into their hands. You know? The Canucks, if they have a lead, it's going to feel more daunting than it does if Edmonton leads.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge edge in Vancouver's favor in a do-or-die game, despite all of Edmonton's, you know, starry collection of top talent, despite the fact that they've been the better team at 5-on-5, despite the fact that they've been dictating pace throughout this series, at least more frequently than Vancouver, although Vancouver has had moments. And by the way, two of those moments, two of their best games in the series, Game 1 and Game 5, there's a commonality there. Home ice. Happened on home ice. So, it's going to be a big game. It's going to be a hard game. It's going to be a game, as we know, where the Canucks aren't favored. But there is a way to do this. There is absolutely a way to do this. And if they can keep it close, if they can make it funky, if they can muddy this game up to the point where one shot, one bounce, one post hit, one missed assignment decides it, well, that's a script that the Canucks can sort of persevere through. That's a script that the Canucks can take advantage of and advance to the Western Conference
Final. And I think that Game 7 funkiness that I was talking about with Gemma, right, where it's rare that you see like both teams clicking at the top of their game in a Game 7, that can be an advantage for the Canucks potentially tonight. Okay, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Lots of thoughts coming in, and I'm really enjoying them. You were talking about the different ways fans and Canucks fans can cope with the stress of a Game 7, with the stress of big games, and lots of people sharing them. Mark the Gas Man in Surrey says, the way I have been able to cope with the highs and lows is having my Sportsnet app giving me live updates while I watch the game. My TV feed is a good 30 seconds behind the app update, so when a goal is scored either way, I have a few seconds to come to terms with the result. My wife has been nervous that I'll get too depressed again when they lose, so I have to be that tea time fan, run errands and tasks, and listen while in my car, sit down and watch the third period. That's from Mark the Gasman in Surrey. I love that. Soften the blow with a little notification they're about to score. So you can do, okay, fine. I'm not going to be devastated when the puck actually goes in the net here. That's a good one from Mark the Gas Man in Surrey. RD texts in, you guys are making me feel better about how I cope. Hard to watch, too much sometimes. I like to listen on the radio while gardening or puttering. Keep busy as a distraction. And Marty the Red says, I am so invested, I freeze, and I barely don't respond to anything positive or negative until I lose it either way based on one play. My son calls me a desperate rager. That's from Marty the Red. I love just like sitting there in pure silence, like, what's gonna make him snap? What's gonna make him snap?
Go, go, desperate rager.
Sure.
Well, no, you didn't think that?
No, I did not think that.
You didn't.
That was not the first thing that popped into my head.
You didn't immediately think of Tyler Toffoli being summoned from English Bay with the do-do-do-do-do-do flute?
I did not think about that.
Stomping
no.
all over downtown Vancouver
shockingly,
like Godzilla?
Absolutely shockingly. That was not the first thing that that popped into my head.
He was
Coovers.
Somebody else says, Troy, I have to work out an hour or so before the game to relieve the stress. We've had a bunch of people texting.
I appreciate that. That's a very, very Vancouver way of being a fan. I love it.
Cam in Surrey says, Game 7 cope. I just finished a hard workout. Then I'm going to have a very rare cold shower next. Go Canucks, go. When you're breaking out the cold shower,
that's
how you
serious.
Know when you're really in it. You're like, I have to make myself actively physically uncomfortable to try to just change my mindset here before this one.
I watch the game in a plunge tub. Okay.
Whatever works, man. Whatever works.
There is no wrong way to fan, and that's especially true tonight, except, except don't throw garbage.
Yes.
And that's it.
And support the team, as you said, right? Like, if you're at the game, this is a...
Try and be as, like, optimistic as possible in the energy you put out. Even if you're the negative fan coping on the inside, you're there. You spent a lot of money to be there.
Yeah.
This is a once-in-a-15-year game
That's the
for
thing,
the Canucks.
As much as we talk about this being an opportunity for the players and a rare opportunity for the players, this is a rare opportunity to attend the game as a fan as well. Very
or
rare
Or watch the
opportunity.
Game as a fan or, like, sit on a patio and watch the game. Be with friends. Like, that's what it's about, right? Like, spend time with your dad or your mom or your parents, you know? Like, that's what it's about. And however you decide to do it, zero judgment, even if you're in a cold tub.
Yeah, but I think especially for the fans at the game, there's a certain obligation to bring it, to bring the noise, to bring
the
excitement.
So and to avoid the nervous Nelly Canucks fan vibe, you know, that has occasionally impacted games that this team has played, key games that this game has played, like the 2011 Game 7 against the Blackhawks, right? Where, like, it's a one-goal game, things get a little, Tave scores, and you can just, now... We know how that one ended with paroxysms of joy unrivaled in this franchise's history. But, you know, avoid that. avoid that nervousness on the power play late, right? Avoid that nervousness after Bergeron opened the scoring in 2011 in the cup final. Like, I do think it's incumbent on fans to try and keep the vibe consistent with what you've given this team all year, which is that certain level of blind faith that they keep rewarding, often with the most, like, circus improbable comeback victories. Again, which, like, it's been 15 years, right, since the Canucks had a meaningful playoff run that fans could attend. And it's like they've squeezed 15 years worth of incredible playoff moments into 3 weeks, 4 weeks. Might get another one tonight.
AK and Van says, I'm trolling online to vent and chill.
Oh, that's
an ultimate Canucks fan.
That's,
I'm just out there mixing it up on Twitter. That's my coping mechanism.
I love that.
That's an incredible one.
I'm gonna steal that and add that to my file. I'm gonna call that person the Doom Scroller.
Vancouver Coolvers.
The Doom Scroller. That's so good. I'm trolling online to vent and chill. That's absolutely fantastic. I love that one. Okay, just before we go, do we have the Dakota Joshua clip here? We'll play Rick Tocchet in the next segment, but I did want to play, because we were talking about it with Gemma as well, kind of that emotional impact on the players themselves from losing Brock Besser and how that could impact tonight. And I know Dakota Joshua was asked about it after morning skate today, and here's what Dakota Joshua had to say.
He was
Coovers.
That's not what Dakota Joshua had to say. Imagine if it was,
though. It would have been amazing.
Like, Coovers! All right. We got Dakota Joshua
here.
Yeah,
it's a very, you know, tough situation. You hate to see it. He's our longest tenured Canuck, but he just adds all the more fuel to the fire to get this done for him. No one's cheering us on more than him tonight, and we don't want to let him down as well. So we'll be battling for him out there.
What was your kind of impression of Joshua? I know Tyler Myers spoke at length about it as well. Just come from the kind of psychological, emotional impact on the other players on the Canucks of the Besser news.
Well, I thought Myers was a little more circumspect with the next man up, which matches what Tocchet had to say.
Yeah,
I thought Joshua got into it a little more. First of all, bringing up the longest tenured Canuck thing unprompted, I think speaks to Besser's stature in that room, right? In a pretty subtle but meaningful way. And then, you know, we'll be battling for him out there, which I misparaphrased as we'll be fighting for him on Twitter. So excuse me to Dakota Joshua, but listening back, I can understand why I flubbed that. Doesn't meaningfully change the meaning. But I thought there was a little bit more defiance in Joshua's answer, a little bit more fire. And I think probably because, you know, Myers is a lot older.
Yeah.
This is his fourth career game seven tonight. He scored in two of them. And so he sounds more like a coach. Joshua sounds more like a battler, right? Like more like and by the way, there's no wrong way to approach a game for those two guys. But I did think there was a little bit more emotion, a little bit more truth in the fact that, knowing that Besser's going to be watching this, rooting the way a fan will almost, right? Like,
yeah,
I was talking about how there's going to be a gap in anxiety level between fans and the team. Well, Besser's going to be on the fan side now. He can't influence the outcome directly.
Besser's got to be the most anxious person. Just 100%. Like that feeling of having been there in the battle with them all year, and now you have to watch, and you're powerless.
Accomplished so much.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a tough blow.
All right, we will take a break here. We will hear from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet. Speaking ahead of Game 7 between the Canucks and the Oilers, keep your text in as well, 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. More Canucks talk coming up here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Playoff game day, game seven tonight at 6 between the Canucks and the Oilers at Rogers Arena. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintech studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at DunbarLumber.com. I always love reading the inbox and getting the text from listeners, but they're bringing it especially today pivoting off what you were talking about, Drance, the different coping strategies from Canucks fans. So keep those texts coming in. How are you getting emotionally, mentally prepared for Game 7 tonight? But first, I want to hear from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet, speaking to the media after the morning skate today. Here he is.
Yeah, he's been a big part. I think obviously he had a great year for us, big part of the team. And he scored some big goals for us, so it's a tough one. But next man up, right? That's the way you got to approach it, like we have all year.
How do you approach potential matchups? Because not only is he a guy that can score for you, but you've had him out there against McDavid's line. How much does it affect that part of it?
Well, you got to lean on some other guys. Some other guys are going to have to take a piece of the pie on that. You know, there are going to be certain guys might have to play certain positions at certain times. It's game seven. That's what you got to do. So there might be some different combos at different times. But yeah, it's a big piece out. But like I said, there's an opportunity for a lot of guys. And some guys are excited about it.
Rick, what can you tell us about the nature of Brock's injury? Just in terms of sort of a formal team statement?
Yeah, I don't want to get in the injury like, you know, just for Brock too. I'd rather wait. You know, we'll talk about it down. I don't want to get into Brock's injury right now.
Can you just give us a timeline? He played Saturday night. He met with us after the game in the media. Obviously, you guys flew home.
Yeah.
When did this become apparent that it was going to be an issue?
Well, yesterday found out he won't be available. Basically, that's it. You know, he's being evaluated. He's probably going to be evaluated again. So I don't have a time frame.
And I know yesterday, and it's game seven, but when I asked you if it was just a maintenance day, did you know before practice then?
I forget what the timeline was. Maybe late morning. I can't remember. I think it was late morning.
Rick, game seven. I mean, Dakota talks to us, but this is what you guys play for. What is the key to being ready to play in a big moment like this?
Yeah, I think you have to lean on your foundation in these things. I think you really want your team to feel comfortable. You know, there's going to be some guys who are going to be nervous, or some young guys. You got a whole different crew of a team, and you want to make sure that everybody feels comfortable. And the best way is to lean on your foundation. You know, I think it's very important that you don't, you're not trying to, it's not a one-man show. You know, you can't think you got to do it all yourself. You do that, that's when you get in trouble. So the one good thing about our team is we've stayed pretty good this year with our system and foundation. You know, we got off kilter, obviously, last game. We weren't at our best. But the one thing we've always leaned on when we've not had a bad game is come back to your foundation. And that's really got to lean on. And you got to play uncomfortable. You know, there's certain things that you've probably not that type of player. You might have to be a little uncomfortable in doing that. If you're a guy that doesn't really block many shots, you might have to block some shots tonight. I think you got to play out of character sometimes.
How has the resilience of this group evolved since you got here 18 months ago?
I think it's been great. From my end, being the head coach, the way they've, we've had some ups and downs, a lot more ups this year. But the response that these guys, that's what I'm more proud of, their response after, things don't go your way or even a poor outing. That's a credit to them.
Hey, Rick.
Yeah.
There's a side of Brock that you got to know last year.
Yeah.
I don't want to use the word project, but there are a lot of parts of his game that had to come around to become a more reliable guy in all three zones. He did the work in the offseason, changed trainers. You got to know the person as well as the player to have 40 goals. How impressed are you that he embraced everything you asked of him?
Yeah, really impressed. I mean, he's had a terrific year. I mean, I'm really proud. I mean, I took the job, he was kind of, wasn't really thought, I don't know, around here it was like, was he going to get trained? It was kind of a uneven thing. And he just took we had a good talk before he left for the summer, changed a few things, dealt with a few things mentally. And, look, who would have thought I had Brock Besser sometimes checking against the best, some of the best players, and playing when we have an empty net. Said that a year ago, people think I'd be crazy. So that's how much he's been evolved.
Rick, you mentioned the unevenness, but throughout last season there was permission from his agent to seek a deal.
Yeah.
And right away at locker room cleanout day, he was like, I want to be here.
Yeah.
Can you give us a sense of just that conversation, that buy-in, and sort of what brought us through that circle to here?
Well, I just remember the first couple of minutes he goes, talk, I want to be here. Like, you know, he told me, like, I want to be here. I like what's going on. And I want to change a few things. I told him, you know, fitness stuff that we had talked about, you know, the way you should train, the way you, you know, whatever. He didn't do that league, whatever they have that league. I think that helped him. Was it, you know, what's, I forget what that league that, yeah, the River Hockey League. I think that's a bad habit league. I should say it. It's actually, I shouldn't say that because they're a good bunch of guys. Or I shouldn't even say that. I'm just joking around. But for a guy like Brock, I thought that really helped him to do his own thing because he came into camp and he was one of our, you know, he scored 3 or 4 goals in the first game. So I think he really took to heart himself that I want to be here, and he did all the things to be here.
C-Love's. Are you starting to see Love tonight?
Yeah.
And then in terms of lineup, you mentioned Brock playing against the other team's best.
Yeah.
That's included a steady diet of minutes head-to-head with McDavid. In terms of replacing him, in terms of other lineup changes, what do you need tonight from sort of the collection of wingers that will come in to sort of replace him in the aggregate or try?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously it's tough to replace his goal scoring. But, you know, we got some, like, you know, Mikheyev or Lafferty, those guys are going to have to supply us with some good defense, but also, you know, can they chip in a goal, play a hard game for us? You know, that's where, you know, they got some legs tonight. So that we're looking at two guys coming in that are going to hopefully give us some really good juice.
Rick, your team earned the right to host tonight's game because of a strong regular season. What's your message to the fans who'll be in the building tonight?
I mean, I knew they were great fans. I didn't experience this. I mean, around town and stuff, it's pretty special. You know, I felt it in regular season, but it's a different level. I mean, you know, if you had a Stanley Cup for the fans, they're right up there. They're pretty damn good. And, you know, the way they cheer guys, you know, Petey the other night or Millsy, Garland one time, they cheered his name, Seeloff, it pumps the guys up. So, yeah. Does it give us an advantage? I don't know, but it sure gives you some juice as a player.
Mick, you got a mountain of experience. You played a long time in around. Do you have any, you know, when you think of game sevens, do you have any, you played Canada Cups, and all these guys. Do you have any memories that just jump to your mind? Stuff you saw, stuff that happened, guys who played hurt?
Well, I've seen a lot of guys play hurt, take needles, a lot of guys over my career. Seeing some unreal players play unreal. You know, the Gretzky, Lemieux, and the Canada Cup. Lemieux, when we were played in Pittsburgh, some, you know, Sidney Crosby, the way he played game seven, I think it was against Ottawa. Those are the special things, but it's the role players, man. It's the guys that they come, you know, they're good players, but they come from nowhere and they do something. That's who you look for, too. You know, there's you know, whether it's Edmonton or us, there's going to be a guy, I think, a role player that's going to be a big key tonight. So I don't know who it's going to be, but there's potential for a lot of guys to be that guy.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet weighing in on what his team needs to do to win tonight and to be successful tonight against the Edmonton Oilers in Game 7. And obviously spoke a lot about Brock Besser and just the transformation and the progress he's seen from Brock Besser in his relatively short time as Canucks head coach, but really stressing, as you alluded to earlier, that next man up philosophy. No surprise there from Rick Tocchet. And, you know, Tocchet speaking a little bit also about what I was talking about in the last segment, kind of that threading that needle of embracing the emotion, embracing the moment, trying to play your best game, but also leaning on your foundation, not getting out of your system. And as he said, you know, hey, it's not a one-man show. If you're going out there and trying to win it all on your own, that's when you get in trouble. We've stayed pretty good on our system and our foundation. And one thing I thought interesting was him saying we've always leaned on that after a bad performance. And of course, you and I have talked about, hey, they have not lost consecutive games in this postseason so far. Obviously, if that continues tonight, they're going to the conference finals. And I thought that was an interesting note from Rick Tocchet to just kind of stress, obviously, the system and the foundation is important always, but especially if you're bouncing back after a poor performance like they turned in on Game 6 on Saturday, to have that kind of ability to fall back on the foundation and on the system, that's something that's been huge for them all season. It's something they need to do in a big way.
Yeah, I mean, look, so you can hear it in Dakota Joshua's voice in that clip we played, right? Like, you can tell that he's recovering from some kind of illness. I think both teams in both locker rooms have dealt with a smattering of the flu
mm-hmm.
Over the course of the series. I think there's mounting injuries on both sides, especially to star players. Now the Canucks are going to be without Besser, but you know, I think
even the guys in the lineup.
Yeah, I think we all know.
We know what time of year it is.
We all know. Yeah. I mean, we've been talking about it with Pettersson all series. They've been talking about it with Dreisaitl all series. You know, I think it goes well beyond that too. And so I think one thing that's sort of shaped this series is both teams have struggled to consistently find their game. Like, games have been decided by who finds their game more frequently than their opponent. And, game one, the Oilers were on their game for first half, and then the Canucks kind of took it over and managed to pull off an impossible comeback, without which we wouldn't be seeing a game seven tonight, right? The Oilers found their game in game two. The Canucks played a really strong first and third period in game three, but the Oilers were on it in the second, and the Canucks were probably lucky to be leading by the extent that they were going into the third. The Oilers obviously found their game in a major way in game
five,
four.
Well, the Canucks in game five. Yes, sorry.
And then the Oilers again in game six. And it's just like, what we haven't seen is both teams, like, we've seen moves and counter moves. What we haven't really seen is like the grapple where, like, my kung fu versus your kung fu, which style wins, you know? And I bet game seven, with everything that's on the line, we kind of get to see at least some of it today. And that, to me, for the Canucks, starts with the forecheck, and for the Oilers, it starts with the breakout, and that, I'll keep coming back to it. That, to me, is the key five-on-five engagement in the series. You talk about limiting McDavid. You can talk about a million other things. Like, can the Canucks blow up the Oilers' attack at the stem and find ways to counterpunch, find ways to generate scoring chances off their usual arsonist ways? If they can, I really think there's a way that the Canucks overcome this. If the Oilers are getting out in transition the way that they did in game one, then I think the Canucks are going to lean too heavily on Artur Seelovs and their play from the blue line in, which is still imposing. But like, at some point, it's going to feel like the dam's going to break, which is how I thought game six felt throughout, even when the Oilers took the lead and then kind of kept pushing, right? To the Oilers' credit, they didn't F around and find out in game six. They actually came out and kept pushing, even with the 3-1 lead in the third period. So for me, the main thing I'm going to be watching, especially early on, is both teams settle into their game, is does the Canucks forecheck play? Does the Canucks forecheck play, or are the Oilers going to be able to get out and like move with their defense through the neutral zone and get clean entries with their defense through the neutral zone and, you know, get some of their fresher bodies with more speed? Because here's the other, the Oilers made a meaningful adjustment in game three, which was loading up their third line with speed. So Derek Ryan moves to the wing to play with McLeod and Fogle. And all of a sudden, the Oilers, because I do think the speed gap between Vancouver's forward group and Edmonton's forward group has been impactful in shaping this series. And not that that third line was great. In fact, I think they were on the ice for the Hoglander goal. But it at least reduced Vancouver's advantage. You know, like when the Oilers were playing that third line that had like Kane and Perry on it, it was, you know, there were moments where it felt like they couldn't keep up with the pace. The Carson Soucy goal, was that in game five? Yeah, Carson Soucy's goal in game five, I thought, was a product of them not having enough speed on their third line. With the way that they lined up in game six, with that faster third line, that faster look on the third line, and then Carrick to sort of help reduce Vancouver's edge in the faceoff circle, like, I do think Knobloch found a couple interesting answers to help narrow the distance. Vancouver's still going to have an edge in the circle. Vancouver's still going to have an edge in terms of forward speed in game seven. But I feel like those edges are blunted somewhat by some of the answers that Knobloch has found. And I'm curious to see how much that shapes what we see tonight as well.
And I know you mentioned this earlier in the show, but just as you're going through kind of the big picture game by game of the series, and it's game four, Oilers play really well. Game five, the Canucks play really well. Game six, Oilers play really well. The commonality in all those games is the home team playing really well in the last three games, right? And the visiting team not doing particularly well. Now, I don't know how much of that is due to matchups, how much of it is just feeding off the emotion of really boisterous crowds, but I do wonder if that is kind of the lifeline the Canucks need tonight without Brock Besser, right? Is whatever the home cooking is that's getting them to help get more to their game much more consistently than they've been able to do in Edmonton, does that play even without Brock Besser tonight?
Yeah, and I think there's no question that it's going to shape it. I mean, the Oilers have dramatically controlled play with the games on Edmonton ice, right? And the Canucks have actually managed to skate with the Oilers far better, at least two of the three games, on Rogers Arena ice. So there's no question that going 4-0 against the Oilers this season, winning the division narrowly the way the Canucks did, having home ice tonight matters. You know, and I'd add this, right? We know what the stakes are for the Oilers. We know Dreisaitl's contract status. We know that this is the best and most complete team built in the McDavid-Dreisaitl era, which, by the way, damning with faint praise. And we know how fragile the next year or two is going to be for Edmonton, regardless of whether the Dreisaitl uncertainty question lingers. Like, he could sign on July 1 and that question's out the window. But when he signs on July 1, it's going to be for a number we've probably never seen a forward sign for, frankly. Right? And that comes with its own challenges for Oilers management. So this is like a huge game. You talked about the stakes, right? They're huge for the Oilers. And sorry, there was a really big point I wanted to make, and I was really excited about it, and I've kind of lost track. And
just power through. Let's see where we go here.
Well, so the
I'm on the edge of my seat.
I know. I'm sorry. I literally.
No, it's all right. Stakes.
I don't think I'm going to land this plane.
Okay. All right.
But
fair enough.
You come into tonight.
He was trying to fight from
Coovers.
Thank you. I needed that. I needed some McAfee. So. Obviously, the stakes are where they are for the Oilers, and yet you come into tonight, this do-or-die game, and I'm just going to pass the mic to you, man. Sorry.
Okay. It's all right.
My brain just went blank there. I'm sorry.
To watch the game to answer.
It's game seven, man. It's happening to all of us.
Yeah.
We're all in it a little bit. We're fighting through it.
I honestly don't know where my train of thought went.
I left the station
and I'm chasing behind
it. I can count on one hand the number of times I've seen you actually like speechless at a loss for words on the show.
I just like, I don't know why I felt the need to couch that this is so meaningful for the Oilers. The Canucks can play spoiler tonight. It's going to be fun.
Okay, 650. Well, we're working through the stress and the nerves of Game 7. We've been taking your texts on how you're doing it all day long as well. Neil in Tofino says, just got out of the water here in Tofino. Nice way to take the mind off the game. Riding and getting rocked by freezing cold massive waves.
The cold tub.
The cold tub.
The cold tub.
A lot
fan.
Of people are turning to cold water in some ways.
Well, man,
to ease their emotions
just
here.
Just remember, if you go into cold water and don't put it on your Instagram, did you really go into cold water?
Sure. I'm not on Instagram, so I can't comment on that. Cam and Kamloops.
You don't see all the cold dip people?
No, because I'm not on Instagram, so I can't. It's impossible.
Wow. How do you live without being on Instagram?
Quite happily. I love it.
Where do you see, like, videos of pizza and Bernadoodles? I don't understand.
The way I've said it in the past is, like, I am neither interesting enough to be on Instagram, nor do I find other people interesting enough to be on Instagram. I don't have the juice to share, and I don't care about what other people are sharing either. So I'm like, you know what? There's just nothing for me there.
I appreciate that.
Cam and Kamloops says, I have my wife choose a show. When it gets hectic, we switch it over to that, and I follow on the Score app. Sometimes too much to take. Nerves of Spaghetti. That's from Cam and Kamloops. I love it. The auxiliary show. Like, hey, we just need, it's got to be like, you know, like, is it cake or something like that? Just like totally mindless, low stress, frivolous TV show that you can switch over to in case it gets really, really stressful. This one. I am calm. Zen. The universe is unfolding as it will. Play your best and have no regrets. What a season, man. What a season. A very mature text there from an unsigned listener who's just embracing the zen of it all going into game seven. There was one more I wanted to read here because we've got so many good ones coming in. Saskatchewan Joe says, I live in enemy territory, Western Saskatchewan. I come from a large farm family, all loyal oil fans. My cousin and I are diehard Canucks fans. I cope by furiously texting him things that just happened in the game. That is a really good, just like the running commentary to your friend. It's not even like insightful or just like, good shot. Oh, they need to clear the puck. You know what I mean? It's just like literally this is just what's happening in the game right now.
Did you see that? It's like, yeah, we're both watching
yes,
the game.
Yes, I'm watching the game. I saw it. It was cool or bad.
Or terrible.
As the case may be. Okay, but some Todd has bad takes. This is a good text. Drance just doing his best impression of me at a dinner party.
Yeah, I honestly had like a subtle point that I wanted to make. I just couldn't land it. Excuse me. I still don't remember what it was.
All right. We will turn next to our guy from NHL.com and InGoal Magazine, Kevin Woodley, get his thoughts on the goaltending battle, the absence of Brock Besser tonight, and just everything going into Game 7 between the Canucks and the Oilers. That's coming up next here. Playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by All Cargo Express. International shipping, importing, and exporting. Explore their services or get a quote at allcargoexpress.com. More Canucks talk on the way here on Sportsnet 650.